Jordan. Hi, Jordan.
David Maher joined.
Welcome, David. Jordan, so far we have Marilyn, Tom, Keller, and Nicholas because Steve is on holiday.
And can I just ask a clarification question? I have minutes from the 24th, and I have Jordan's summary from our last call. But am I right that I don't have minutes yet from the last call?
Yes, quite right, Marilyn.
Okay, thanks. And the thing, the summary that Jordan did is all that's available. Maria didn't do a more...
No.
Okay.
Not as far as I know.
Okay. Thank you.
And the other minutes will be coming shortly from it.
I'm fine. I'm just trying to make sure I reviewed the appropriate material.
Glenn, do we have an agenda for this call?
I did not send one out, unfortunately, Nicholas. So we'll talk about that in just a minute.
Okay, sure.
Have you got Jordan's last posting on the list, Nicholas?
The one sent out on Wednesday?
Yeah.
I have that, absolutely.
Good.
I think we'll actually, we'll probably spend a little bit of time on the call to keep making sure that I captured everything there, but beyond that, we'll probably wait till the next call to the follow-up items on.
Hey, excuse me, Simon Shears now joined.
Hello, Simon.
Hi, Glenn. Oh, there, excuse me, I've got a bit of a cold.
Excuse me, Maggie Mansurkia now joins.
Hi, Maggie.
Hello, how are you?
I think we're all still gathering, Maggie. How are you?
Good, yourself?
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm expecting it's probably going to take a few minutes longer than usual to make it onto the call this morning.
Hey, excuse me, Uta Decker now joins.
I'm sorry, Jordan, take a minute longer because...
You have to wait on hold and go through the whole process instead of just typing.
I'm not sure why. There's no reason we can't just do a user dial-in.
There's no joints.
I think Glenn had set these up because she was going to be away from her...
I'm away from my computer, so I can't do a recording.
Yes, thanks.
And to make sure that the call is properly recorded and looked after,
I
set up this kind of call. Because you remember the trouble we had last time, Marilyn?
Ah, I do.
Yes, so I take my precautions.
This is just for the next 2 weeks, I think.
Just for
the next two calls.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. It's Olaf here. I've just joined.
Hi, Olaf. Welcome.
Thank you.
Give people 1 or 2 more minutes to dive into this. Make sure everyone can take it on the call.
Cassie's not on the call normally.
Is there anyone from the registrar? Oh, Tom, did you say?
Tom, yes. Tom's from the registrars. We've got 2 from the registries. We've got ISP Maggie. We've got IPC 2 people. Steve's on holiday. Maryland for the BC. We've got nobody from the non-commercials.
And we are expecting David. I did.
I'm here.
Oh, great.
Oh, good, David.
Okay.
And Suzanne, actually, our liaison doesn't always join us, does she?
She doesn't always join us, but she is always informed, Marilyn.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. I know she's been gone for a bit.
Okay, why don't we go ahead and start talking about our agenda, at least. I apologize for not sending something out previously, but what I had planned to do was following items. I think we can probably actually keep this call reasonably short because we've got some meatier ones coming up in the near future based on, we'll discuss through this. But in any case, my goal for this call is first to quickly review the summary I had sent out of the concerns and consequences of removing the various data points, just to make sure I hadn't missed anything, and to talk through next steps with regards to that work, which mostly relates to, I think, something we had talked about on our last call, which is people forwarding any suggestions that they have to remedying these concerns. Next, to talk through general approach and work plan regarding our current with our current timeline that we had discussed in Marrakesh, and just sort of taking note of where we are and what we'll need to do between now and really the end of September in order to get a preliminary report complete in October, which is our current timeline. The third sort of substantive area I wanted to talk about today was to talk through an issue that Marilyn had raised on the last call or the previous one, which was how do we make sure people know about the new roles and responsibilities that might exist if we adopted something like the OPOC, or at least maybe amending the OPOC to include some mechanism to improve awareness around this. And then last, I wanted to make sure that there were no other outstanding items, substantive items relating to the OPOC that we hadn't discussed. We've had a discussion around a number of sort of specific areas, but I actually might move that fourth area earlier in the agenda, just to make sure that if we might allocate some time to discuss if there are substantive areas, substantive concerns or issues relating to the OPOC that we haven't yet broached during our discussion so far. So that's what I had on the agenda. Is anyone else have anything they'd like to add to this?
Jordan, it's Carolyn. I just had a clarification.
Sure.
In reviewing where we are against the entire work of the task force terms of reference,
mm-hmm.
we should probably include that at some point, because we're going to need to have in our report, to the council, if we believe that the entirety of our what we have accomplished and whether we have concluded the entirety of the terms of reference. And I say that because we have subdivided the terms of reference. We've already delivered certain elements of work.
Right.
But we probably want to have an examination before too long of whether we think that concluding the OPOC work concludes the terms of reference.
Yeah, so I think that's a good point. We can probably combine the making sure we've discussed everything on the OPOC with an item to make sure that we're discussing everything with regards to our terms of reference, along with our discussion of how we're generally going to work towards wrapping up this work for a preliminary report in October.
And then the work related to the preliminary report, I'd just like to note for special attention a discussion about any outreach that needs to be done to other SOs or advisory committees beyond what's already underway.
Yep. Okay, yeah, we'll make sure we think a little bit about that. And the other thing, I'll actually add one other item there, which is I got a note from Bruce Tonkin that apparently there's an expert who has volunteered for his services, and I just wanted to maybe have a general discussion of if we need any other sort of expert input as part of wrapping up our work. Anything else anyone wants to add?
John, this is Ute. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead, Ute.
Because I don't participate in many of these calls, I was just wondering, how many more calls are we going to have until we think that we have wrapped up the OPOP issues, that we have a complete set of issues, questions, and answers?
Sure. So I'm hoping that we'll know at least all the questions, either by this call or the next call. And then we can spend probably, hopefully, our calls in September resolving any of those issues and any other work that we identify in the meantime. Basically, according to the timeline we've put together in Marrakesh, we need to put together a preliminary report by October in order to have a public comment period that ends in November, which would give us time to forward a final report to the council in time for Sao Paulo. So when in October, there's probably a little bit of flexibility, but I'd like to target early October rather than late October. So at present, we have two calls scheduled in September, plus one more in August. That would be three total calls between now and the start of October, and it's possible we might add one more sort of call in October to finalize some coordinating work. But ideally speaking, I'd like to be getting near the end of our work by the essentially three calls from now.
Thank you.
Any other questions or suggestions for the agenda? Okay, great. So the first item then is to review the summary that I had sent out from the last call just to make sure I'd captured all of the issues there. The point of the summary is not an official. I summarized and grouped things into fairly big clumps, and I wasn't intending to try to capture all of the nuance, but simply to try to make sure that all of the high-level concerns were captured and that the point of this is really to identify areas where ideally speaking, we would identify some improvement for the proposal so that we could address these concerns. And in the case of one issue that Marilyn raised, which was that there some companies would find it useful to have additional points of contact, I think that's an example of where the issue was raised and we actually Ross had suggested an improvement and it seemed to satisfy the concern. So I'm hoping we can do something similar for other broad areas of concern as well, or at least try to. So that's the purpose of the summary, not to be an official part of the record or try to capture the nuances of everyone's concern. So with that in mind,
Jordan, with that in mind, I have a clarification.
Yeah, go ahead.
With that in mind, I need to really clarify something in my mind here. Is Maria on the call?
No, Maria's not on the call.
Oh, but Maria is our staff support for who is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So I really appreciate the work that you did, and I am happy to go forward, but when we go through at the end of this call a review of the support that's needed in order for us to meet our deadlines, given the fact we're going to work against a kind of a deadline schedule, I think we need to look at timeliness of and thoroughness of documentation and materials, minutes, et cetera. So maybe we can, maybe we'll have to come back to the staff on talking about staff requirements.
Yeah, so I think Olaf is on the call, so I'm hoping he can at least capture the concern.
Sure.
And also, yeah, it would be, I'm expecting that there will be minutes for the call that will include perhaps greater detail around some of the issues.
Jordan?
Yeah?
David.
Go ahead, David.
Hyman made a comment and a request to add a number for summary under the heading, and I believe that should be included. It was in her email dated August 9.
Yeah, no, I'm familiar. So I think actually that's just a sub. I mean, I think it's a further expansion. Perhaps I could add that sentence to the existing point instead of adding a new bullet, because I think it's actually related to the previous.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah. So.
That's fine with me. I'm not speaking for Kathy, but I think the point is important.
Yeah, so that's fine. I mean, once again, the point here is not to capture the to be fully expansive in capturing the concern. I think any solution or dealing with any of these issues or these sets of issues would probably resolve all of the concerns under a single bullet. Or I would. That's where I think if there's concerns, I've overly summarized things. That might matter, but I'm fine adding a sentence to that bullet.
And then, Jordan, just mm-hmm. to be clear, and I think in support of what David was saying, we expect the staff to do the more detailed elaboration. This is just for us to be able to note if we've caught the main headings.
Correct. That's exactly right.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
Jordan, do you think you could walk us through the message you sent out on Wednesday?
Sure. I'm glad to do that. So let me pull it up real quick. Okay, so I'll walk through. There's not that many bullets, so hopefully we can do this relatively quickly. So we talked about three broad areas where the OPOC proposal removes data. The first relates to removing the mailing address for the registrant, and I summarized three consequences of this. The first is that it makes it difficult to determine jurisdiction, and as a result of that, if you had a legal concern regarding the domain name, it might be difficult to figure out which laws applied to the domain name. Or similarly, if you were a government agency trying to figure out whether or not you should take action on a domain name, if you didn't know what country or what legal jurisdiction it was under, it would be very difficult to decide whether or not you ought to be paying attention to it or not. So that's one concern. The second concern is that there are types of problems, and the example is, I think Steve gave some examples about some legal issues relating to a domain name, and sometimes it's best to get in touch directly with the registrant to quickly resolve an issue along those lines, and so without the mailing address, there wouldn't be necessarily a way to do that. You'd only have the name, and you wouldn't be able to directly contact the registrant. And the third area was another consequence, I guess, but this was, intended to be a positive consequence, is that there's certain abuses of the WHOIS system that can take place. And this could be anything from physical danger to, just sort of chilling of speech and so on by bad actors getting in touch with the registrant. And that's where Kathy had also added the concern about spamming or phishing. I think I'd already tried to capture that with my discussion about fraudulent notices, but we could probably just make that more generic. The second broad area where data removal happens in the OPOC proposal is it replaces the administrative and technical contact with the operational point of contact. So that might not be removal so much as a change of data that's displayed, but in any case, there were some issues raised, and I tried to capture those. The first was that the administrative contact in some cases is a person who can directly resolve certain types of issues, like trademark or copyright concerns were the examples given, and that if you don't have an admin contact and instead have an OPOC contact, it might add a layer of indirection to that overall process and slow things down. The second is sort of related to that, or more generally, that by not having direct contact with the old school contacts, there might be some delay introduced. Once again, there's sort of a layer of indirection concept there. And the third issue that Marilyn raised, which I think has been resolved since, is that some businesses need to list more than one contact because they have different groups dealing with different types of problems. So Ross proposed a solution to that, which was to require registrars to allow at least two points of contact, which is sort of consistent with the practice today, although they might be today, under the proposal, they would both be called operational points of contact instead of one being called administrative and one called technical. And then the last area of concern that was listed was that removing contact data from the registry output, the last area of data removal was that under the proposal, there's no more, if you look at a registry level who is, there's no more contact information. And the two concerns that were raised there was first that the data at the registry level might sometimes be acting as sort of a backup where registrars either don't publish who is data or their systems are not working or something like that. And we had made a couple requests to the staff for some additional data here in order to figure out how big of an issue this is. And then secondly, the registrars reiterated that they have some concerns about the facilitation of transfers until EPP auth codes are implemented by all the registries.
John, so can I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
One thing that struck us within the IPC was that often you need the details of the registrant in order to determine whether or not there is a problem. For example, in order to determine whether or not that person has a trademark license or not, you would have to know who that person is. So maybe that would fit under the first bullet, the first point.
So Steve,
this makes it difficult to determine whether there's jurisdiction or whether there's a problem.
So Steve has raised that point that in the context of removing the registrant's name as opposed to removing the mailing address. So here you'd still know sort of the name of the registrant, but you wouldn't know.
Yeah, well, that could be John Smith in the U.S. I would know the name and I would know his jurisdiction.
Right. So I guess my question is, are you saying you wouldn't know if someone had rights or not unless you knew their mailing address? Or
unless I could identify that person, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know that concern was raised, so we could probably change that first bullet to incorporate that concept.
The other question that I have is, in the second bullet, second question, we say there may be some delay introduced by not having direct contact with the registrant, I suppose that would be. And obviously, that we could also envisage a situation where the OPOC would just plain not respond. Would there be any system of redress? Is that an issue that fits in this list of questions?
Well, I think that is not related to. I mean, you tell me, but my understanding is that concern is not related necessarily to removing the data because anyone could not respond. At any point along, you know, even if the data was even if the registrant name were there, the OPOC name were there, whatever, at any point someone can just decide, I'm not going to pay any attention to whatever you're telling me.
Jordan.
Go ahead, Mary Lou.
Can I elaborate on that? Because I want to be sure if I understand Uta's point. I'm not sure that it's a consequence of removing the data, Uta, but it may be a consequence, and I'm just thinking out loud, so you guys, everyone may want to edit this. It may be a consequence of changing to a OPOC, and part of our discussion was what are the job function responsibilities of the OPOC that are agreed to. So is timely passing on of legal notices part of the OPOC's responsibility? We might think that if the OPOC is an employee of the registrant, that that's a matter of delegation between the registrant and the staff person that they designate. If OPOCs become largely third parties with no relationship to the registrant, I would assume there would need to be a clarification of legal responsibility for timely delivery. I don't know if that exists today in the present proxy services. But it may be that we're raising a point, Jordan, that we wouldn't know if a notice is passed on or not, right? The failure to respond might be a failure of the OPOC to pass the notice on rather than a failure of the registrant to respond.
Right. So maybe in the second point it would be that removing the mailing address may impede a communication channel that involves the expeditious resolution, and we could expand that to say may impede or even prevent a communication cancel, or at least add some uncertainty, I guess, is something else we could add there. And I agree that we started to talk about on our last call, and I certainly think it would be a productive line of further discussion for some of the suggestions around these points to be to, maybe create some obligations, either that the registrant has or the OPAC has with regards to making sure that the messages get delivered, or there being some transparency to the complainant. You know, if you have concerns and you've got some way to make sure that the message is being delivered.
Jordan, this is Olof. I've got a question just for clarification about the appointment of an OPOC. How do you do that? I mean, of course, the registrant could elect to be the OPOC himself, and or elect to have the registrar as an OPOC, but also elect to have a third party, his lawyer or whatever. But in those cases, you would need to have some kind of an agreement that they sign up to be an OPOC as well, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm presumably, and I think it's in the proposal itself, there's some sort of language around this, but there would be some sort of relationship. The registrant and the OPOC would have some sort of relationship or contractual agreement that would describe what the OPOC is supposed to be doing on behalf of the registrant.
And that would have to be filed with the registrar as well.
So that's not a current requirement in the current proposal.
Okay.
But the current proposal is open to amendment and suggestion if people think that that would somehow improve it.
I guess there's a need for a safeguard that John Smith doesn't appoint some totally innocent bystander, third party, and to act as a fall guy for his illicit running off this, that, and the other.
Yeah, and I think that relates to some, we had some discussion on our last call about, it's probably generally problematic for us to impose obligations on the OPOC for that very reason and others, but we could impose additional obligations on the registrant that they would then be obligated to pass through to the OPOC if they wanted, you know, if they wanted to appoint one. But the OPOC itself wouldn't necessarily, you know, if something bad happened, the registrant would still be on the hook for whatever the bad action was, not the OPOC.
And that's no different than today, where you can put any fictitious name down you want for technical contact or whatever.
Yeah, no, that's a good point too.
But guys, that may be true today, but the whole purpose, that there's multiple purposes of our exploring the OPOC. One of the purposes we've agreed is that the OPOC would enable improved accuracy, and the compromise that's being proposed to... single contact, and that will help...
Sorry, we lost you for a minute there, Marilyn.
Remember that in our discussion about the benefits and risk of moving to an OPOC approach, there are many constituencies who are concerned, many others who support the concept, but one of the benefits that was being held out is improved accuracy of contact information.
Correct. And so I guess the last point, at the very least, the email, like, at a very minimum, the email address that was listed for the OPOC, someone would have had to, that's only true on complaints, I guess. But there's certainly some ways in which we can try to minimize the chances of that happening. And once again, if people want to make suggestions along those lines to improve the proposal, I'm sure that would be welcome.
Jordan, my question maybe relates to the for us to just flag this and then come back to it, and that is, what is the consequence of giving false and misleading information in if the OPOC is going to result in improved accuracy?
Mm-hmm.
Then we are going to need to think about what is the consequence of providing false information.
So I think that, yeah, I think that discussion probably belongs in the discussion on the accuracy topic.
Okay.
Because essentially we're saying, you know, you're giving bad data and what should happen if you do that.
Right.
We don't have any time scheduled to talk about accuracy right now, but as we go through the rest of the call, I think we can probably look for some time to spend some more time on it.
Okay, thanks.
Jordan, Nicholas here. Can I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Nicholas.
Well, it's actually more a question than a comment. I realize that I've missed most of the calls in July, August this year, and I apologize for that. But I was wondering, looking at your message from Wednesday, has there been any discussion recently with regard to the Oak Book proposal about how the existing proxy registration services would be dealt with under the Oak Book proposal? Would they basically continue to exist? Would they simply be supplanted by the Oak Book regime? Is this something that has been raised? Because if not, I think it's an interesting consequence that could be mentioned about among the questions that are raised by the Oak Book proposal.
Yeah, so we haven't actually had any explicit conversation about that. And I would suggest that one of the topics I want to talk about a little later in the call is if there are other items relating to EOPOC that we have missed and haven't yet discussed yet. And so this seems like a good one to add to that list. Okay, any other comments or thoughts on this initial list that I put together? And if someone is typing really close to their phone, if you could mute, that would be great. Okay, so well, I'll try to capture at least a little bit of our discussion today. I think the points are maybe added a couple of points, and I'll try to send out a revised list to spark people's imagination. But keeping in mind that the main point of this list is simply to encourage you to, if you see an issue on there and you think you have an idea to improve the OPOC, to address this concern, that's really what we're trying to get at through this list, not necessarily all the bad things that we hate about the proposal, but to try to inspire people to suggest specific improvements to address the concern. Okay. So moving on then. So I want to spend a little bit of time before we get to our real substantive topic today, which is the discussion about notification. I want to spend a little time talking about how we're going to complete our work. There's three sort of subtopics that we probably need to capture here. One is just to talk generally about timelines, and maybe we'll do that last, but then to talk about what sort of information we need for, what sort of information we need for the preliminary report, and to make sure that we feel like we're going to cover all of the work that we need to for that. Second, to talk about, to make sure that we've covered all the topics that we want to with regards to the OPOC proposal in particular. And in that first point, the preliminary report, also to make sure that we're covering all of the general terms of reference areas that we currently have outstanding. The third area is to talk about the use of experts, if any are required. And the fourth area, something I've gotten, so if I remember, fourth area is timeline, sorry. So on this first point, talking about the preliminary report and the terms of reference, so generally speaking, I don't need the general items required for the preliminary report are just some sort of summary of our work, the policy recommendations that we suggest. If we did engage experts, any sort of discussion about what they did for us. We're supposed to have constituency statements. And given the way the work has evolved, it may actually make sense to go back and get another round of constituency statements between now and when we put together the preliminary report, which means we should probably call for them pretty imminently, given our timelines. Also, if we have any, we have a little bit of a chicken and egg problem because we're also supposed to include the impact on any constituencies that may be felt as well. There's a little bit of strangeness in the way that the PDP has drafted works, which is we're supposed to get constituency statements first and then come up with a policy recommendation, and that's magically supposed to incorporate the impact on constituencies, even though there's not a second round of call for constituency statements. So,
it's useful and should be understood for the record of the minutes that in the GNSO review, it was acknowledged that the PDP is not a perfect fit and that task forces will often expand, I guess would be the right word, or adapt the PDP, and they just need to be sure that they're documenting the changes to it and advising the council. We can't skip the PDP, right?
But right.
We can modify the time frame. We can include additional relevant information that the task force believes is helpful.
Yeah, so I think that's a good point and something that we've basically been doing in our practice so far with regards to this.
And along those lines, Jordan, I think our preliminary report ought to document what we've done for additional outreach.
Yeah, that does make sense. And I guess so in addition to documenting what we've done with regards to additional outreach, the point you had raised earlier is that we have to talk about if there's additional outreach still required as well.
Right.
But so maybe let me talk first. Let me come back to that in just a moment and ask. It seems like we probably need another round of constituency statements, just given the long time since we've had the last round and how they may be, I think, fairly tangentially related to the work product at this point.
I think that's right, but just Marilyn speaking, but don't they need to be effective? Don't they need to be about a semi-draft?
Are the constituency statements, and I think the clarification here is, in this case, the constituency statements would be limited to the OPOC proposal and not about the full terms of reference, right?
Well, so what we would probably want to do is make sure that let's have this discussion shortly about whether or not we're incorporating all of the terms of reference in our work.
Right.
And if there's elements of the terms of reference that aren't included in the proposal, to make sure that we add those.
Mm-hmm.
And then have constituency statements on sort of a unified proposal at that point that's going to cover all of the remaining terms of reference.
And normally, I could turn to the staff, maybe, I don't know if you have the PDP requirements up in front of you, but do you know, or could we look up the...
Yeah, let me try to grab them real quick. Do you know if the terms of reference are posted somewhere easy for me to access?
The terms of reference are posted to go to the website, Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Go to issues. And the issues go to who is.
Mm-hmm.
And then about in the middle of that page, you'll see terms of reference.
There we go. Okay, great.
Have you got them? Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Jordan?
Yeah?
You're probably going to the bylaws, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I was just pulling up the main terms of reference, actually.
Oh, okay. I was looking in the bylaws for the PDP time frame.
Yeah, no, I was doing that sort of by memory as opposed to looking at the bylaws. But let me just reiterate the terms of reference really quickly, and then if you have a comment on the bylaws, please turn to those. So our terms of reference are... number one, to define the purpose of who is, which hopefully we've already done. At the very least, we've published a report on that topic. The second is to define the purpose of the registered name holder, technical, and administrative contacts. And here, I think based on past discussion, the OPOC proposal proposes to essentially say that the two of them aren't really used anymore, and that it introduces a new operational point of contact, which the purpose is defined in the current proposal. The third is to determine what access, what data collected should be available for public access in the context of the purpose of who is, how to access the data, and determine how to access the data that is not available for public access. And the fourth is to determine how to improve the process for notifying a registrant of inaccurate data and the process for investigating and correcting the inaccurate data. And then the last is something we've already done as well, which is to determine how to resolve differences between a registered name holder's obligation to abide by applicable laws and, well, it's the national law issue, basically. So 2, 3, and 4 are the remaining items.
I don't mean to start a debate here, but mm-hmm. I think we need, I'm not sure that we are defining the purpose of who is. We agreed, since we could not define on the purpose of who is, to put forward 2 functional options, and we are working on one definition, right? Am I not right? We're working on...
Well, so we issued a report relating to our first task.
Right.
And the council adopted for the purposes of our work one of those definitions that was included.
It did, but I think we need to keep that modifying phrase in mind, because there have been subsequent discussions, including the latest resolution at the council, that indicates that there's still work to be done overall on the purpose of who is. But for purposes of our work, we have a working definition. Would that be?
That's fine. So I think that my goal would be that this report would relate to items 2, 3, and 4. If we thought it was somehow useful to reopen this the first issue, I guess we could. But
I don't think, according to council's direction to us, we're asked to reopen
right.
it.
Right. I think that's right. Yeah.
Right. So 2, 3, and 4. When we're asked to define the purpose of registered name holder, admin contact, and when the OPOC proposal may replace a functional role, you're suggesting that, I think the actual determination of the purpose of the registered name holder, so we might come out with a statement, there is no purpose in collecting the registered name holder, or there is a purpose in collecting the registered name holder. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah. So for the registered name holder, I think we do need to have language specifically with regards to the registered name holder. The technical and administrative contacts under the OPOC proposal
mm-hmm.
would essentially become moot. So I would say there's no longer a purpose for these things within who is, and instead there's a purpose for this thing called the operational point of contact, and here's what its purpose is, and it would include the definition that we're working on right now.
Okay, I might, I'll come back to a comment about that later. On item 3,
mm-hmm.
on data collected, we haven't actually started that work or work on item 4.
Three is not data collected, it's determine what data collected should be made available
to
public
displayed,
access.
Right.
And so I think actually that's directly addressed by the OPOC proposal, because it says essentially here there are some elements of the registered name holder that aren't displayed anymore, and there's these items are displayed. And
I
so
see.
I think that's fairly directly
okay.
addressed.
That,
I think
the OPOC will do that, then it's just 4.
I think actually number 4 is addressed as well in section in the last section of the OPOC proposal, which relates to accuracy.
I'm not sure that I agree with that, and let me raise a question.
Sure.
Could I just ask how Jordan phrased it? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Could you ask how I phrased it?
Yeah.
I said I think that the let me pull up the proposal really quickly to make sure I'm referring to the right section. But I believe that the item 4 of our terms of reference is dealt with by the last section of the OPOC proposal, which is second to last section. Sorry, correcting inaccurate who is data is the title of the section.
Uh,
actually, Jordan, I think the terms of reference statement is about for those parties who have lost needed access to formally displayed data, such as law enforcement, et cetera.
Oh, so that's actually in so I think you're referring to within section, within terms of reference 3, the statement that says determine, where is it? Determine how to access data that is not available for public access. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
We've not done any formal work on that point. So the position that the author of the OBOC has taken is that the way to get that data that's not available for public access is to use sort of legal procedures to get it.
I understand that may be the author's view, and that may be the view of some members of the task force, but we still have to have a discussion on it.
Yes, that's fine. That's something we can add as an area that we still need to have further discussions on. Okay, so does anyone else hear anything there that's not being captured currently by are there any other areas where some additional discussions needed relating to our terms of reference? I think the two I've captured so far today are Nick, the one that Nick suggested earlier, which is the proxy registration topic and what the interaction between proxy registrations and the OPOC proposal is. And the second is the one that Marilyn just pointed out, which is how entities that no longer have access to data get it under the OPOC. Okay. So those are the main items that we're trying to address in the terms of reference, and I think that those we've also just covered talking about are there the key areas of the OPOC that we haven't discussed. So the third area I wanted to talk to you with regards to this ongoing work for the preliminary report was any expert feedback that we needed. And I raised this topic largely because Bruce Tonkin forwarded me, I guess apparently in Marrakesh, he received, or shortly thereafter, I'm not 100% sure which one, he was approached by a volunteer expert named Stephen Lau.
He was approached by a government person.
My understanding is, let me see.
I think if I recall it.
Yeah, Stephen Lau is the, I have no idea.
Privacy officer of Hong Kong, if I recall properly.
Something like that, yeah.
Right.
Well, let's see. He is, oh wait, here we go. He used to be the CIO of the Hong Kong government, and he's currently a member of the board of .hk, and he was a privacy commissioner for personal data in Hong Kong, but is no longer that person.
Yeah. Jordan, I'd like to address the issue of experts and expert consultation overall.
Yeah, so that was my intent to make mention of this specific expert that has come forward, but to do it in the broader context
sure.
of the discussion of experts overall.
Yeah.
But if you have a point you'd like to make about experts overall, I'm glad to entertain it.
I think that the process of taking consultation with experts is something that we're not expert enough on ourselves, pardon the pun, but I don't think we can be taking self-identified experts. If we decide to have a consultation with experts, then we need to determine what the purpose of that consultation is and establish an agreement on how to identify them. I do think we have the opportunity to hear from people who think that they are expert or have expertise in a particular area through our work. I know there was a woman that we met with unofficially for informational purposes from Europe who was not there officially and was not designated to speak for the European Commission, but still the task force met informally to hear from her. We also are probably, when we talk about further outreach that we need to do, I think we should talk about how we ensure that we have further informed input from people who are working in the area of consumer protection, law enforcement, privacy, et cetera. But I'm reluctant to I'm reluctant to select experts until we have a process. If the task force thinks we need to identify experts, then we would need to make sure that experts fill in the blank for information we haven't been able to gather or are truly independent and aren't there to advocate a particular position.
Yeah, thanks. I think that makes a lot of sense. So I guess the broad question I want to ask the task force is at this point whether we think that we've identified any areas where we need expert input at this point or in order to finish up our work on remaining terms of reference items. My personal opinion is it strikes me that we've been making fairly good progress recently, and we haven't identified any specific areas where we've felt like we've needed some sort of expert advice in order to proceed. But that's my personal impression recently.
I will mention one area that I had hoped, if Maria was on the phone, we would be able to hear about the progress on. At the council level, staff have been tasked with some additional data gathering, and I think that the data gathering that they are doing, and specifically that information will be useful to the task force, and it may be that consultation with CCTLD managers may fill in the blanks for us. At some point, that would be an outreach. That, to me, I would think that is outreach as opposed to retaining experts.
So, what can you tell me? What's the data that the council has asked the staff to collect?
Glenn, you don't have computer access, do you?
No, I don't have computer access.
There's a resolution that we approved. And it includes a request to staff to identify a representative group of CCTLD practices.
Oh, okay. So I think that does sound like it would fall more into the category of outreach, which is something we still need to talk about, than experts. But there are a couple points, certainly, where I think we do need some additional staff input, including two areas that we identified on our last call relating to how often registrar aren't able to provide who is at all for a particular domain name. So undoubtedly we'll find some areas where we need some data gathered from the staff, but that probably also doesn't feel like it's necessarily expert input. It's just the staff performing some data gathering function for us.
Jordan?
Yeah, go ahead, Ola.
Olaf here. I've taken note of that, and I do remember it from the last council call. No information on where that stands for the time being, though.
I hadn't planned on talking about that this call, so it probably won't be relevant till
I also see in square brackets in your mail from the 9th of August that the task force will request that staff provide a list of registrars and so on and so forth. That's almost next to last point in your overview. Now, I didn't attend the last call, so is this something that has been tasked or will be tasked, and is it happening now?
Yeah, I asked Maria on the last call to gather that information.
But you haven't heard back from her on any timing, Jordan?
I've not. I tried to send her an email.
Okay.
Friday or this morning, but fairly close to the call. So, I'm expecting my initial expectation was that hopefully we'd be able to discuss those items on the next call. So, hoping that we'll have the data by then.
Yeah. I guess unless I'm speaking just for myself, and David may want to chime in as well, I think that outreach is a higher priority because the outreach efforts we've engaged in so far have tended to result in people who are practicing in the area or who are affected in the area commenting. And that, I think, fulfills much-needed additional advice and input and information to us. I don't, at this point, see the need for independent experts.
Thanks, Marilyn. Does anyone else see any need for experts to complete our work?
I generally agree. I agree with Marilyn on that point.
Yeah, as do I. So unless someone chimes up with with some sort of need, I think we'll probably...
So Jordan, I would propose that we go back to this person and thank him and tell him that there will be written materials and a public comment process.
Yeah, that's exactly what I intend to do.
Yeah.
Okay. So that with that in mind on the topic of experts, actually, why don't we use that to segue into additional outreach required and we'll get the timeline last. Marilyn had raised a point earlier. We certainly want to document any outreach we've done, but is there remaining outreach that we feel like we need to do as part of completing the process? Certainly, we have a public comment period that's coming up, and one of our goals is to try to publish the preliminary report earlier in October rather than later October so we can have a longer than usual public comment period in order to make it so more people, especially organizations or entities that take a long time to prepare formal responses, will have more of an opportunity to respond. I know that we've had some outreach already to the GAC in Marrakesh, but it sounds like Marilyn's suggested that we're trying to get a list of CC operators as well that we might be able to outreach to. Are there additional outreach efforts that task force members think would be useful to incorporate into our remaining work?
Can you say again, it's Marilyn, can you say again how you at this point are envisioning GAC outreach?
This is David. Can you tell me? I'll be right back. I have to step out for a minute.
Thanks, David. So I am not sure, actually. I've
There's two things that are underway, and maybe I should just mention them. There is a commitment that so in a previous meeting, and I believe it was Wellington, in the GAC Council consultation. The GAC made reference to the development of principles for who is and for for GTLD policy.
Yes.
And those are still not available, as I understand it. And council did ask for a dialogue with some members of the GAC. That hasn't happened. It might be that it doesn't happen until So one thing we should sort of flag, and maybe staff could take this question back to Bruce, is what's the progress for having the discussion between the GAC, the council, and the task force, as, of course, observers and guests, on the principles on who is.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is the probability of a GAC council working session in Sao Paulo built around the resolution that the council passed, because it specifically calls that out as a working item. Now, I think those two things are very related.
Mm-hmm.
But, that's a definite thing to be thinking. That's something that that is most likely to happen, this discussion between the council and the GAC. And, of course, the task force would be invited to join the council. The second thing that normally would happen, given our cycle, I think would be a public forum or a public comment opportunity on our output.
Yeah, so certainly there will for sure be a public comment opportunity, and I would hope that the timing will work out so that in Sao Paulo there's also some opportunity for public input in person as well. We have a little bit of a timing problem in that the timelines that we've proposed and that the board has endorsed, not that the board directly controls this process, but it's helpful to keep in mind everyone's expectations in this process, does anticipate that we will have essentially concluded the task force work and referred a final report to the council by about the time of Sao Paulo. So it doesn't give us as a task force a lot of opportunity to take advantage of activities in Sao Paulo in terms of refining our work.
Right. With that in mind, that in essence means that any further work really is in the hands of the council.
Correct. I think that any ongoing dialogue with the GAC in particular
right.
would likely be at the council level, given those timelines. So that's why I'm a little, it's a little hard to say, you know, I think we have somewhat limited options in terms of what sort of outreach we can do. I think certainly keeping Suzanne and hopefully the GAC apprised of our ongoing work is something we ought to be doing. And certainly if it's possible for this dialogue about the GAC principles to happen somehow magically before Sao Paulo, mm-hmm. that would be great. and we could certainly take that. The feedback from that dialogue into consideration. But other than that, I'm not 100% sure I don't have any other ideas personally as to what we can do.
What about, and I'm just brainstorming here, but what about the possible idea of an intersessional phone call with the GAC subcommittee and the council that the task force attended and participated in?
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly be open. It's unfortunate that we don't have Suzanne on the call to maybe bounce the feasibility of that off of, but
yeah.
I'd certainly be open to that. We could maybe try to encourage it.
With our timing, Jordan, if we did it in October, they would have our preliminary.
Correct.
Yeah.
That might be the most useful, and that way it would essentially happen during the public comment period. So
right.
We could consider it and refine any. Or make any refinements needed as a result of the feedback as part of the final report. So, make a note of that.
Sorry, that would be an intersessional phone call with the GAC and the WHOIS Task Force and the Council?
No, Glenn.
Just the GAC and...
No, communications with the GAC need to be formally with the Council, but the intersessional call should be convened between the council and the GAC, but for the purposes of besides talking about the principles, also consulting on our proposal.
Good. Thanks, Marilyn. Sorry.
And targeting sometime in October for
yes.
That seems like a good idea, Marilyn. Any other thoughts or suggestions about outreach activities?
Jordan, I think we've found in the past that written comments aren't always, they don't always solicit input. We have done well with conference calls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if timing permits to maybe to think about a couple of conference calls.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think that we could, during the public comment period, we could have a couple of conference calls where we solicited feedback via the telephone.
And then do we need to, we are going to need to have our comment from the other advisory committees and the ALAC, I think we can expect because of the liaison. We just talked about the GAC. What about the Security and Stability Advisory Committee? Does that wait until we get to the council, or do we need to do it more?
This seems like that would be good to at least hopefully provide them the opportunity to comment ahead of that and maybe give them some heads up It might even be worth, I'm not sure what the procedure for this is exactly, but it might even be worth inviting them to attend. I mean, I know we've had informal sort of dialogue with Steve Crocker in the past, but it may be even worth inviting them to one of our, participate on one or more of our future conference calls, as well as giving them notice of the proposal as well.
And is there any implication in what we're doing that would indicate we need to reach out to the, and there may be, we may need to reach out to the RIRs, to the ASO, in changing to, because there's an interrelationship for, in particular, ISPs and entities dealing with network attacks between the RIR databases and the WHOIS databases.
Yeah, that, I mean, I think that's probably not a bad idea, especially since the RIRs have taken their own approach to deal with some of these privacy issues in their own WHOIS databases recently. So I think I could imagine a session where maybe we, I mean, certainly we could send our proactively outreach and send them, you know, a status report in terms of what we're doing and invite their comments and certainly maybe make some time available to on a call if they thought it would be useful to participate.
Jordan,
yeah,
and Marilyn, it's all up here. Would you like to do that as a conference call or a meeting in Sao Paulo? Because they will be present and organize their meetings in Sao Paulo.
Yeah, I think we have the timing issue. We can't. We basically need to be done by Sao Paulo, unfortunately. We need to. We'd have to be done by conference call, I think. I mean, it's possible. It certainly could be done as a council activity later on as well. But I would imagine we might be able to get a few key representatives from the RIRs or the ASO by telephone.
We could certainly. I'm
not sure that everyone on the task force, for instance, is aware that among the there are a number of policy changes at the RIRs, and some of them have to do with the way that the policies now allow them to address abusive IP addresses. So that's not necessary. You know, that's a very different approach to dealing with abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so a conference call before we finalize things might actually be educational for all of us.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think sooner rather than later would be useful. So I think that reaching out to them and to the CSAC are some things we can do fairly soon, and see if they, we should encourage them to come and provide some input. Maybe we'll have a special sort of participatory session to get some feedback from these other groups.
So are we going to maybe be able to get from Glenn or other staff a sort of an annotated calendar with these ideas on it, and then they can be reviewed by the full task force for feasibility and timeliness?
Yeah, so I actually wanted to talk about timeline momentarily, so I think as we start to do that, maybe we can have Glenn scroll and write down the sort of some of
yes.
where the dates fit. So yeah, that's a good idea, Marilyn. So any other thoughts about outreach? Okay, so we have essentially, so thinking about timeline now, as I indicated earlier, we have at least three, and let's just count on three calls for now remaining. This dialogue with the CSAC and the RIRs may make sense as a separate special call that we do independent of our current calendar, especially since we've already locked in our dates and it may be difficult to guarantee that we're going to get participation from other people on the specific dates that we've already chosen. I would probably propose that we have one more call maybe in September with the invite the CSAC and the some representatives from the RIRs to participate to get some feedback from them, essentially an outreach session. The other thing we've talked about is having some calls for general public comment during the month of October after we've published our preliminary report. I think we've got three calls remaining of our own to do substantive work on the proposal. There are three areas that we haven't discussed yet, and I think one of them I had hoped to talk about today, but I think we're not actually going to get to, which is how we notify people of the changes and so they can take full advantage and properly use any, you know, once we've made these definitions of these various types of contacts and so on, how we propagate that information to people and help them understand how they're supposed to use them. That's one issue. Second issue is the intersection of the proxy registrations to the OPOC proposal. And the third area is how we access data that's no longer available as a result of any changes that we make. So those three areas remain, as well as our discussion, two other discussions that we have teed up as well, which are number one, to talk about any proposals relating to improvements to the OPOC that would come out of looking at the consequences or concerns that we've identified. And the second area is to review whatever staff feedback we get on the number of who is queer, essentially trying to figure out whether or not the registries serve as a useful backup to registrars who don't publish who is data. So what I would probably propose is that we try to deal with a number of those topics on our next call and focus sort of purely on these substantive topics, particularly getting the feedback from the staff on whether or not the registries are serving as a backup to the registrars on for who is contact data. And then we could also segue into the conversations about notice the proxy registrations and accessing data that's no longer available. On our following call, which isn't until the middle of September, I think the 18th of September, I would propose that we then talk about any proposals to amend the OPOC in order to address concerns that had been raised previously, and then hopefully on the following call be into any final discussions or editing and so on. Hopefully by then we might have a draft preliminary report from staff, but sort of by the middle to end of September. And so we could be talking about the preliminary report essentially on that last call in September. So that would be my proposal as to how to use the remaining calls that we have available. And I wonder if I'm missing anything there, if other people have feedback on that.
Sounds good, Jordan.
Sounds like a plan, I guess. So I think there's at least one. So we'll send that out as a list of that can be included in the calendar we're trying to put together, along with a potential or a hopeful call, an outreach call with the CSAC and the RIRs in September, and as well as some ongoing requests for some dialogue with the council. With the GAC, between the GAC and the council as well.
Also in September, Jordan.
So in October, I think we talked about having the potential call with the GAC, and in September having a call, sometime in September having a call that would include some representation from the CSAC and the RIRs in order to get some, do some outreach and get some feedback from them.
Okay.
Okay. Any other thoughts or comments on timeline? So if not, I will probably propose that we wrap up. I realize it's been a pretty procedural call. I don't think I missed anything except for the notice topic, which we're going to defer to the next call. We'll have a pretty busy next call, and we'll probably have to limit each of the we'll try to limit the discussion in each of the areas to 20 minutes or so. So if people have ideas in advance with regards to these topics, it would be useful to send them to the list, maybe, to spark the conversation before we begin. I'll try to put together a quick summary of the areas that we're planning on discussing and send it out as an agenda right away so that people have plenty of time to prepare. So is there anything, anyone else, any final thoughts anyone else wanted to discuss before we conclude this call? Okay. Well, we will wrap up then, and next week we'll be discussing, we'll get some feedback from the staff, hopefully, on how registry, who is used.
Excuse me, the operator, Mr. Greg Ruth, now joins.
Hello. Just in time for us to end. We'll be talking about what the nexus between the OPAC is and proxy registration, how access to data might be made available to those that need it for data that's no longer published as a result of the OPAC, and finally, that's all. Oh, and sorry, and the notice topic that we talked about earlier.
Okay.
Okay. We'll talk to you all in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan.
Thanks, Jordan.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.